Hello, this is Mary, and I'm reading to you from the Pantograph from Monday, March 2nd, 2026. From the front page of today's paper, McLean County Museum of History, Democracy Talk Inspires Hope. Event discusses virtues, contradictions of life and liberty, by D. Jack Alkery. Bloomington. Democracy dialogues continued at the McLean County Museum of History with the first discussion on a phrase key to American democracy, life, liberty. About 70 people signed up for the Saturday event, which included a brief presentation, followed by an hour of discussion in small groups. The crux of the discussion was introduced by guest speaker Matthias Thielmann, history professor at Illinois State University, weighing the government's responsibility to protecting life while ensuring personal liberty. Virtue, to the founders, was essential to having that proper balance between empowering the government on one hand to preserve life and keeping the liberty of the people on the other hand, he said. To the authors of the Declaration of Independence, both the people and those in government needed a virtuous morality, Thielmann said, to allow the people the liberty to do what they please while restricting what he called licentiousness. Licentiousness is this idea of basically unbridled freedom, he said. Some examples of licentious liberties Thielmann gave that are counterproductive to the production of life would be illicit drug use, unregulated gambling, or reckless driving. What you will be discussing today is this contradiction between life on one hand and liberty on the other, he said. Continuing dialogues. Democracy Dialogues is a series created by Candace Summers, Senior Director of Education at the History Museum. It started earlier in February with a discussion between retiring Democratic U.S. Senator Dick Durbin of Springfield and Peoria's Bray LaHood, former Republican Congressman and Transportation Secretary for President Barack Obama. However, Saturday's discussion was the first of four, formatted in presentation, then discussion. It was also the first focused on a specific phrase. I literally looked at the declaration, and then I'm like, okay, what phrases stand out to me that would be things that had different meaning, that's changed over time, Summers said. And one, of course, life and liberty. What role has the government played in upholding, preserving, protecting since the very beginning? How has that changed over time? How have our laws changed over time? While the three inalienable rights in the Declaration are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, Summers wanted to keep the first discussion on the first two words, she said. We didn't want to have it so loaded. We wanted to really chunk it out to make the conversation more easily digested, she said. Following Thielmann's presentation, the audience divided into six groups, led by a facilitator to guide the discussion. Discussing the Declaration of Independence can lead to difficult conversations, said Carolyn Yockey, the previous president of the History Museum. We didn't get very political, she said, but occasionally it was a little bit of, we wish things and people in Congress were doing what is right. The key to having a productive talk like this is ground rules based in respect, Yockey said. In that room, there were a couple of times that this person disagreed with that one, but there was never a moment when you felt tense in the room, she said. It's all couched in being civil and very understanding. Being in such conversations instills a sense of hope, said Phyllis Versteeg. We all felt free to voice those opinions, and it opened my eyes to some different ways about thinking about things, she said. But that freedom starts with seeing the humanity in someone with whom you may disagree, Yockey said. First of all, I think that I have to see you as another of God's people, she said. We have to have that very strong feeling in us that everybody is important, even if everything about them is totally different from me. Also from the front page, Supreme Court, gun rights for pot users? High court case set for Monday creates unusual alliances, by Lindsay Whitehurst, Associated Press. Washington. Gun rights and cannabis legalization are usually on opposite ends of the political spectrum, but both movements brought about seismic shifts in the United States in recent decades. Now those forces are lining up for a rare overlap in a case coming before the Supreme Court today, and it is not the only unusual alliance. The Republican-Trump administration will defend a firearm restriction with backing from gun control groups, typically more aligned with Democrats. On the other side is a pairing of the National Rifle Association and the American Civil Liberties Union. At stake is a federal law that bars people who regularly use marijuana from legally owning guns. It is an issue that divided lower courts since a landmark 2022 Supreme Court decision expanded gun rights. Cecilia Wang, legal director at the ACLU, said the law violates the Second Amendment and is unconstitutionally vague about what it means to be a drug user. We're deeply concerned with the potential of this statute to basically give federal prosecutors a blank check, she said. Millions of Americans use marijuana, and there is no way for them to know, based on words of this statute, whether they could be charged or convicted of this crime because they own a firearm. Cannabis is legal for medicinal use in most states, and for recreational use in about half the country. But the law also applies more widely against all illegal substances, meaning the case could allow broader legal gun use by other drug users. The group Every Town for Gun Safety said the law meets the Supreme Court's requirement that gun laws must have a strong grounding in the nation's history and tradition. Restricting firearm use by illegal drug users is as old as legislative recognition of the drug problem itself, attorneys wrote. Cannabis remains illegal on a federal level, though President Donald Trump signed an order to fast-track its reclassification as a less dangerous drug. His Justice Department will also ask the justices to revive a criminal case against Ali Danyal Hermani, a Texas man who was charged with a felony because he had a gun in his house and acknowledged smoking marijuana every other day. FBI agents also found a small amount of cocaine when they searched his home as part of a broader investigation, but the gun charge was the only one filed against him. The conservative-leaning Fifth U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals rejected the case, finding that only people who are intoxicated while armed can be charged with a crime. The administration argued in favor of gun rights in other cases, but government lawyers say this law is a justifiable restriction. Habitual illegal drug users with firearms present unique dangers to society, especially because they pose a grave risk of armed, hostile encounters with police officers while impaired, they wrote in court documents. The law fits within the nation's history of restrictions on people who were frequently drunk, they argued. While the conservative majority Supreme Court expanded gun rights, it also upheld a federal law disarming people who are subject to domestic violence restraining orders. The Department of Justice argues that drug users are similarly risky. The law it asked the court to uphold was also used in the case of President Joe Biden's son, Hunter Biden, who was convicted of buying a gun while addicted to cocaine. But the NRA and other gun rights groups, typically aligned with the GOP, are arrayed against the administration in Hemani's case. Americans have traditionally chosen which substances are acceptable for responsible recreational use. and the fundamental right to keep and bear arms was never denied to people who occasionally partook in such drugs, unless they were carrying arms while actively intoxicated. Lawyers for the Second Amendment Foundation wrote in court documents. The cannabis group NORML agrees, saying one of the fastest-growing groups of users are baby boomers, trying products such as marijuana gummies to relieve arthritis and sleep problems. It's laughable to think that by outlawing cannabis users possessing firearms, you'll minimize the problem of gun violence, said Joe Bondi, chairman of the board of directors for NORML, one of the country's oldest and largest groups advocating for the legalization of marijuana. Also on the front page of the Pantograph from Monday, March 2nd, 2026, Middle East, Khamenei killed, Iran vows revenge, 3 Americans dead, 5 wounded amid strikes on U.S. military bases, by the Associated Press. Dubai, United Arab Emirates. Iran vowed revenge Sunday after the killing of its supreme leader and traded strikes with Israel as part of a widening war prompted by a surprise U.S. and Israeli bombardment. The U.S. military said 3 service members were killed, the first known American casualties from the conflict. Blasts in Tehran set a huge plume of smoke into the sky in an area of government buildings. Iranian authorities say more than 200 people have been killed since the start of the U.S. and Israeli strikes that killed Ayatollah Ali Khamenei and other senior leaders. Earlier, Iran fired missiles at targets in Israel and Gulf Arab states in retaliation, while Israel pledged non-stop strikes against Iran's leader and military. The strikes and counterattacks underscored how the killing of Khamenei and U.S. President Donald Trump's call for the overthrow of the decades-old Islamic Republic carried the potential for a prolonged conflict that could envelop the Middle East. It's the second time in 8 months that the U.S. and Israel have teamed up to use military force against Iran, and a startling show of military might for an American president who swept into office on an America First platform and vowed to stay out of forever wars. In Tehran, there was little sign that Iranians had heeded Trump's call for an uprising against the government. The streets were largely deserted as people sheltered during heavy airstrikes, witnesses told the Associated Press, speaking anonymously for fear of retribution. The paramilitary Basij, which has played a central role in crushing protests, set up checkpoints across the city, they said. In Israel, loud explosions caused by missile impacts or interceptions could be heard in Tel Aviv. Israel's rescue services said 9 people were killed and 28 wounded in a strike that hit a synagogue in the central town of Beit Shemesh, bringing the overall death toll in the country to 11, with 120 wounded. The U.S. military said 3 service members were killed and 5 others seriously wounded, without providing details. It said several others sustained minor shrapnel injuries and concussions and are in the process of being returned to duty. In the 12-day war in June, Israeli and American strikes greatly weakened Iran's air defenses, military leadership, and nuclear program. But the killing of Khamenei, who ruled Iran for more than 3 decades, creates a leadership vacuum, increasing the risk of regional instability. Iranian President Masoud Pezeshkian said in a pre-recorded message that a new leadership council had begun its work, and Iran's Foreign Minister Abbas Agarki said a new supreme leader would be chosen in 1 or 2 days. As word spread of Khamenei's death, some people in Tehran could be seen cheering from rooftops, witnesses said. Others mourned as a black flag was raised over the Imam Reza shrine in Mashhad. You have crossed our red line and must pay the price, Iran's parliamentary speaker, Mohammad Kalabaf, said in a televised address Sunday. We will deliver such devastating blows that you yourselves will be driven to beg. Trump warned that retaliation would only lead to further escalation. Trump fired back in an all-capital letter social media post, "They had better not do that. If they do, we will hit them with a force that has never been seen before." In a sign of how the attack could stoke regional unrest, hundreds of people stormed the U.S. consulate in Pakistan's port city of Karachi on Sunday. Police and paramilitary forces used batons and fired tear gas to disperse the crowd, and at least 9 people were killed in the clashes. As U.S. and Israeli strikes pounded Iran, the Islamic Republic retaliated with missiles and drone attacks on Israel in nearby Arab Gulf countries hosting U.S. forces. The air war could rattle global markets, particularly if Iran makes the Strait of Hormuz unsafe for commercial traffic. Around 20% of the world's traded oil passes through the vital waterway, and oil prices are already set for swings. When Iran struck U.S. bases in Bahrain and the United Arab Emirates, the attacks have also hit outside of military installations, including a hotel in Dubai and Kuwait's international airport. Oman, which has negotiated nuclear talks between Tehran and Washington, said it intercepted projectiles that appeared to target one of its seaports. At least 4 people have been killed on the Gulf Coast. As Supreme Leader Khamenei had final say on all major policies since 1989, he led Iran's clerical establishment and the Revolutionary Guard, the 2 main centers of power in the governing theocracy. In southern Iran, at least 115 people were reported killed when a girls' school was struck and dozens more were wounded, the local governor told Iranian state TV. The Israeli military said it was not aware of any strikes in the area, and the U.S. military said it was looking into the reports. Tensions have soared in recent weeks as the Trump administration built up the largest force of American warships and aircraft in the Middle East in decades. The president insisted he wanted a deal to constrain Iran's nuclear program while the country struggled with growing dissent following nationwide protests. Democrats decried that Trump had taken action without congressional authorization. The White House said it briefed several Republican and Democratic leaders in Congress in advance. Turning to page 2, today's flick fact. Question: beer nuts are made right here in Bloomington, so why aren't they handed out on flights? Answer: because airlines know us. Give every passenger those red skins, and every seat becomes a crime scene. How time flies. 100 years ago, March 2, 1926, articles of incorporation of Bloomington Savings and Loan Association were filed for record yesterday. 75 years ago, 1951, Bloomington Normal landlords got rental increases on 131 units in February, a report from Stephen Bates, assistant area rent representative, indicated. The total amount of increase amounted to $1,317. 50 years ago, 1976, Normal councilman Richard T. Godfrey was so nervous Monday night that he couldn't stay home to see how he would fare as a mayoral candidate in Normal's election. But his worries were unfounded. He scored a resounding victory over Charles F. Armitage and Charles L. Baugh to become the city's new mayor, effective April 1st. 25 years ago, 2001, acclaimed novelist David Foster Wallace, whose Infinite Jest has been called one of the greatest books of the 20th century, will leave Illinois State University next year for a teaching post in California. Wallace, 38, has been named the inaugural Roy Edward Disney Professor in Creative Writing at Pomona College in Claremont, California. He will start in fall 2002 after he completes his MacArthur Genius Grant. He certainly gave us a lot, and I hope we gave a little back to him, said English professor Charles Harris, director of the Unit for Contemporary Literature at ISU. Harris said eventually Paloma College made him an offer he couldn't refuse. Pomona is an elite liberal arts college with about 1,500 students. From the front of the sports section, cards commit to Marmol. Manager signs two-year extension with St. Louis by Derek Gould. Jupiter, Florida. The partnership that Heim Bloom said he hoped would grow and flourish like the contender the Cardinals are aiming to cultivate will now have the years together, too. The Cardinals and their manager, Ollie Marmol, announced Sunday morning a contract extension that could keep him in the position through 2029. The St. Louis Post-Dispatch first reported the agreement Sunday morning. The two-year extension begins after this coming season, goes through 2028, and includes a team option for 2029. Chairman Bill DeWitt Jr. and Bloom, the first-year president of baseball operations, hosted a press conference to announce the contract Sunday at the team's new player developmental facility. At the start of spring training, Marmol, 39, was entering his fifth year as manager, but the final year of his previous extension. Marmol has expressed enthusiasm about a season focused on player development and when he can channel the interests that got him into coaching after his playing career in the Cardinals minor leagues. He began with an interest in being a teacher. They're super excited about the moments we're going to have to truly teach and dive into the details of the game, he said earlier this spring. This is a group that is extremely receptive to that. So, for those reasons, I'm excited. Occasional conversations about an extension have been going on between the manager and new front office since Bloom's rise to lead baseball operations in October. DeWitt reiterated Saturday that the goal has always been to lock up Marmol long term. From page 11, Blood Lunar Eclipse Set Tuesday Morning by Meredith Howard, Belleville News Democrat. Belleville. The full moon peaking Tuesday, March 3rd, will bring a blood moon or total lunar eclipse to Illinois stargazers. Blood moon is the popular term referring to a total lunar eclipse, and the name is used because the moon appears orangish or reddish during a total lunar eclipse, according to NASA. This is because our planet blocks most of the sun's light from reaching the moon, and the light that does reach the lunar surface is filtered through a thick slice of Earth's atmosphere. NASA's website reads, "It's as if all of the world's sunrises and sunsets are projected onto the moon." A total lunar eclipse occurs when the moon moves through the inner part of Earth's shadow. You can see a total lunar eclipse without any special equipment, NASA said, although your view can be enhanced by a dark environment, binoculars, or a telescope. A partial lunar eclipse will be visible before and after, but the period of totality will be from 5:04 a.m. to 6:03 a.m. Tuesday. If you want to take a photo of the total lunar eclipse, NASA recommends using a camera on a tripod with exposures of at least several seconds. The more dust or clouds in Earth's atmosphere during the eclipse, the redder the moon appears, NASA's website reads. March's full moon is also referred to as the worm moon. Possible explanations for the name's origin include earthworms appearing as the soil warms, or beetle larvae emerging from thawing tree bark, according to the Old Farmer's Almanac. Full moons have multiple names, and many come from indigenous cultures. The almanac uses indigenous moon names, along with monikers from colonial America and other North American sources. Just a few days after the lunar eclipse, Illinois residents will spring forward and move their clocks ahead 1 hour for the beginning of daylight savings time, which starts 2 a.m. Sunday, March 8th. Turning to national and world news, the Digest. OPEC countries say they'll boost production. New York. Eight countries that are part of the OPEC Plus oil cartel announced Sunday they will boost production of crude as U.S. and Israeli forces launched a major attack on Iran, and the country retaliated against Israel and U.S. military installations around the Gulf, disrupting oil shipments from the region. The Organization of Petroleum Exporting Countries, in a Sunday morning meeting planned before the war began, said it would increase production by 206,000 barrels per day in April, which was more than analysts expected. The countries boosting output include Saudi Arabia, Russia, Iraq, the United Arab Emirates, Kuwait, Kazakhstan, Algeria, and Oman. Attacks throughout the region, including on two vessels traveling through the Strait of Hormuz, the narrow mouth of the Persian Gulf, could restrict countries' abilities to export oil to the rest of the world. Pakistan. Violent clashes between protesters and security forces in Pakistan's southern port city of Karachi and in the country's north left, at least 22 people dead and more than 120 others injured, as demonstrators supportive of the Iranian government tried to storm a U.S. consulate on Sunday, authorities said. Nigeria. At least 15 people were killed after gunmen attacked three communities in north-central Nigeria, Amnesty International said on Sunday. The simultaneous attacks occurred on Saturday in Tashan, Mahi, Saduro, and Runtua villages located in the Borgu area of Niger State, the rights group said in a statement. Texas. A heated U.S. Senate race in Texas entered its final stretch Sunday, with candidates on both sides of the aisle making final pitches to voters ahead of Tuesday's primary. Incumbent Republican U.S. Senator John Cornyn is fighting challenges from Texas Attorney General Ken Paxton and U.S. Representative Wesley Hunt, while Democratic U.S. Representative Jasmine Crockett will take on State Representative James Tallarico. Meeting delayed. France and Lebanon are postponing a March 5th conference on the Lebanese army until April, the LSE Palace said in a statement Sunday, following the launch of the U.S.-Israeli strikes on Iran. Three die in Texas bar attack, terror link suspected. Austin. The gunman who killed two people at a bar on Texas early Sunday in a mass shooting is being investigated by the FBI as a potential act of terrorism. He was wearing a sweatshirt that said Property of Allah and another shirt with an Iranian flag design, a law enforcement official told the Associated Press. The shooting, which also left 14 wounded, erupted a day after the United States launched an attack on Iran with Israel that killed Ayatollah Ali Khamenei. The gunman was identified as 53-year-old Nadija Niagni, the Department of Homeland Security said in a statement. He first entered the U.S. in 2000 on a B-2 tourist visa and became a lawful permanent resident 6 years later after marrying a U.S. citizen. We'll take a short break now and return with the second half hour of the reading of the pantograph from Monday, March 2nd, 2026. Please stay tuned.